Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and
moving. Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news with Willem van Denteren shortly, and as always during the show we'll be joined by our former ITN journo turned pundit Derek Dyson. Then we'll catch up with Jackson Irvine, who's been something of a talisman for Box to Box as we've traversed his career from Scotland, England, back to Scotland and now Germany at the iconic Bundesliga to club St Pauli, and fresh off a key role in the recent World Cup qualifiers. Looking forward to a chat with one of our favourite Socceroos. We'll talk more Socceroos and Matildas with Willem after that. Then off the back of his record-breaking hat-trick for Argentina at Buenos Aires Monumental Stadium, where Lionel Messi broke Pelé's all-time international goal-scoring record for the South American diaspora of players, we'll have a chat with the Guardian's Marcela Mora Iaraho about the significance of the record as Messi seeks to conquer the Everest of football with the Albiceleste in next year's Qatar World Cup. Speaking of World Cups, last week we touched on the furore over whether the event should become biennial. We felt the discussion deserved more, so this week Edge and I will go head-to-head on the pros and cons. And to make sure it doesn't get ugly, the ever-urbane Dyson will be our moderator. And as always, we will wrap it up with stoppage time and a look at some of the big stories, including what has been a cracking start to the Champions League. Edge, plenty on this week. As always, I enjoyed some of those Champions League matches, including one result at Anfield.
I'm sure you did, Rob. Welcome to you, and great to be with you again for another episode of Box to Box, and a warm welcome to our listeners here in Australia, but also the many internationals that are tuning in from far-flung corners of the world. Yes, Champions League was fantastic. You would have been maybe a little bit worried at halftime when Liverpool were losing to AC Milan 2-1.
Fair dinkum, looked like they had a cannon blasting the away goals early, but they just couldn't convert. And yes, 100% right, very worried when the result looked to be going the way of Milan, but it all ended up like the fairy tale that it should have been on a European Champions League night in Liverpool, my friend.
Yes, the glorious European nights returning to Anfield with fans in the stadium, and you could tell everybody was upbeat about that. But I'm looking forward to speaking to Jackson Irvine as he's moved to the iconic Hamburg club St Pauli. There's quite a story about that, so looking forward to talking to him. Maybe we'll get a little bit of a history lesson from him as well. But without any further delay, let's check in with Willem van Denteren, who has all the latest news. Welcome, Willem.
Thank you very much, Michael. Thank you, Rob. Great to be back for another week. The Socceroos' hopes of hosting next month's World Cup qualifier against Oman in Australia appear dashed, with Doha again the likely alternative. The October 7 fixture was tentatively booked for Parramatta, but it's reported state and federal governments won't sign off in time. The next target for Football Australia will be the home fixture against Saudi Arabia, also booked for Parramatta on November the 11th. And Marco Monteverde has been breaking news in this sphere over the last little while. But Michael, that now looks a very tough window with Japan at Saitama off the back of it. I guess the positives that can be found are that they'll probably be playing in that nice air-conditioned stadium in Oman, and when they go to Japan, it will be behind closed doors.
It is disappointing that that match won't be played in Sydney. I was hoping that it was going to be played in behind closed doors, at least on home soil with some sort of biosecurity bubble. But look, we're just a little bit ahead of the vaccination rollout, aren't we? So maybe the next window we'll have an opportunity to see the Socceroos and Matildas back on home soil. Having said all of that, playing against Oman in Qatar, not a bad thing. The boys will be used to Qatar and that part of the world. The European players, not too far to travel. That's a bit of a bonus. It is a lovely facility that they've been staying and playing in. So let's hope they get on that nice service and we can do the job against Oman in Doha before heading to Japan.
We spoke of W League expansion over the past couple of weeks. Now, Wellington Phoenix will become the 10th side in the competition in time for the upcoming season. The competition is going to increase from 57 games to 74. Wellington's squad will have to feature 7 Australian players as well as the standard 4 visa signings. Discussions between the APL and both Western United and Central Coast about their inclusion ahead of the following season are ongoing. Now, Rob, the issue a little while back between Football Australia Australia and the APL in terms of a New Zealand side was that with the Matildas and Football Ferns are basically in competition with each other, that would be giving New Zealand a leg up. So it looks like they've found the balance here with seven Australian players to feature in the squad. Does that seem fair to you?
Oh, it does, and it just seems to be the obvious answer. I mean, how can you possibly have a New Zealand side in the men's competition and not one in the women's and mount an argument that doesn't stack up for the men's? Look, to be honest, it was ridiculous in the first place. So, you know, we've got to get the depth from both countries to the standard where they can both supply competitive teams across a top flight competition. There's no way in the world New Zealand is going to be able to run its own competition and maintain that depth that they need to. It helps them, it helps us. You know, good outcome.
Lionel Messi has broken Pelé's record of the most international goals scored by a South American male during Argentina's World Cup qualifier against Bolivia. Messi's hat-trick took him two goals clear of Pelé's 77, which the Brazilian remarkably achieved in just 92 games. Messi, for comparison, has done it in 153. Marta's record for most South American goals full stop is going to be safe for a little while yet. 109 she scored for Brazil's women. Now we're going to hear from Marcella to flesh this story out a little bit more shortly, but Rob, there is a man called Neymar who might have his sights on it a few years down the track. He's only 5 years younger than Messi and he's on 69 goals, so might take the mantle back for Brazil.
Yeah, it'd be a good battle to see. I'd rather see it in Messi's hands than Neymar's for any number of reasons.
Moving over to the States now, the US Soccer Federation has offered its female players identical contracts to those of their male counterparts, only to be accused of a PR stunt. The proposal includes a new CBA with a shared revenue model, while the Federation have called for all players to push FIFA towards equal World Cup prize money distribution. US Soccer President Cindy Parlow-Cohn has said the massive discrepancy in World Cup prize money is the most challenging issue in negotiations. The team have somewhat surprisingly, in my estimation, hit back and said PR stunts and bargaining through the media will not bring us closer to an agreement. Now, Michael, it looks on the surface is that they've achieved what they've been after all along, and that is pay parity within their federation. It now looks like they're taking on a bigger beast in FIFA, and that's not unjustified because of the discrepancy between male and female World Cup prize money. But is that not a separate battle? Would you not sort of tick that off and then move on to the bigger fight?
Yeah, you would think so, wouldn't you? I mean, this is a highly politicised issue. We might also mention that Joe Biden, in his election campaign, made a very public statement about equal pay for US women, and also tied that sort of equal pay status from US soccer to funding for the 2026 World Cup. In fact, about 6 weeks ago, a group of Senate Democrats introduced a bill into the Senate that intends to block funding for the 2026 FIFA World Cup unless US soccer installs equal pay. So I do believe that they've actually taken a leaf out of the deal that the Australians have done, which is basically the same contractual amount of money for time spent. The big disparity is obviously the share of prize money. The share of prize money that the Matildas and Socceroos get is equal. However, the prize money in the women's game versus the men's game is extraordinarily different. So that's obviously the point that the players are making. And, you know, this has got a long way to go. And it's obviously now a highly charged and political issue in the US. And Cindy Cohn, we should also remember, is a former US women's national team player, the current president of US soccer. So she's got a difficult path to negotiate here, hasn't she, Willem?
She certainly does. She's been doing it for a couple of years now, and I think she's relatively well respected, but you're right, it is a sort of difficult one to be on the other side of the fence. Just the raw numbers, I think there, it's roughly about $400 million in prize money. That's US given out to the Men's World Cup winners and second and third places. Around $30 million for the women. So yeah, a long, long way to go and certainly a noble fight. Onto the pitch to finish now. Bayern Munich, Manchester City and Ajax have emerged as the big winners from the opening week of the Champions League, while Manchester United and Barcelona have plenty to consider. Jack Grealish became the first Englishman since Wayne Rooney in 2004 to score and provide an assist on Champions League debut as City defeated RB Leipzig 6-3.
Grealish come from an onside position there. A little sleepy on the right side of the defence, Leipzig. Jack Grealish! Well, it was inevitable.
Sebastian Haller was even more impressive on European debut for Ajax, scoring 4 in their big win over Sporting Lisbon, and Bayern embarrassed Barcelona 3-0. We're going to have a chat about more of the Champions League later on in stoppage time with Derek. We're each going to preview a side that we've chosen to see how deep they can go into the tournament. Rob, I wanted to throw it to you, though, earlier. You were watching Jordan Henderson score a true captain's goal for Liverpool, but this match day represented the debut of Stan as a football broadcaster in Australia. How do you think they went, Max Rushton, Foz and Boz?
Yeah, look, I think they're a great trio. I think Max is the modern day football broadcaster, if you like, in that he's a deep thinker, he's funny, he loves the game, and Foz and Boz, well, you know, they're part of the furniture in terms of Australian football. I think Stan were good in so far as their broadcast concerned. Obviously, they take most of the footage from the host broadcaster, so yeah, I think it was a good start. What was also a good start was your effort there, Willem, apart from the fact that you didn't mention Sheriff in the big winners of the Champions League, but we will deal with that later, as you've already flagged, when we go through our selections, of which I've made the big effort to not talk about Liverpool and go for the underdogs. So stick around. That's going to be a fun chat at the end of the show. All right, what is going to be a good chat is our conversation with Jackson Irvine after the break. We've talked to him since the beginning of this show, since he was in Scotland, England, now he's in Germany. He's one of our favourites. Stick around. Jackson Irvine next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, as we said off the top of the show, our next guest, Jackson Irvine, has been a bit of a talisman for our show. We've watched his career from Scotland to England, back to Scotland, and now Germany at the iconic Bundesliga 2 club, St. Pauli. And for anybody who's not familiar with St. Pauli, you will be now, because that piece of Aussie rock legendary, to create a word, is the song that is played when the team run out onto the pitch at the Militor Stadium every week. And it's great to welcome Jackson back to the show. How are you, Jackson?
Well, very well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, mate. What sort of atmosphere is there at this ground? I mean, look, people who are listening to the show would know St. Pauli, but there are some who wouldn't. I'd urge them to get onto YouTube and have a look at some of the vision. But it, I mean, it's iconic for so many reasons, which we'll talk about, but the atmosphere at that club, playing Hell's Bells as you run out onto the pitch, hair must stand on the back of your neck every time you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty wild. It's like nothing I'd really experienced in football before. But it is a proper rock and roll football club. You know, even if I'm sure people will be able to find the images, if you see like what the tunnel looks like when you walk it down, it's like dimly lit with skull and crossbones and graffiti all over the walls. And it's an intimidating place to come as an opposing player, that's for sure. But for us, it just gives you that extra buzz every time you go out onto the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, people who follow your career will know that, you know, you've got some alternative lifestyle about you, mate. You're a music fan. You love your fashion. You love to cook. We know that too. But this city, Hamburg, is a really cool city, and a city that when you had the opportunity to move there, we knew that you wanted to go to the continent for a while. But you'd been there as a young bloke in the Celtic youth side. But bit of a dream come true for you, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it feels like a lot of the pieces all came together perfectly for me in this situation. Yeah, as soon as, you know, the name St. Pauli was mentioned to me as a possibility, it was something I was obviously very, very keen to pursue. I only took a brief conversations with the people within the club to know that it was going to be somewhere that I felt would satisfy what I was looking for at this point in my career in a lot of different ways, and it's absolutely living up to every part of that so far. The city's fantastic, as you say. It's a very alternative city, and it's just got so much to offer, even in, you know, a time where it's maybe not as fully open as it will become. But I feel like I've really embraced all of it already, and that's only going to, as you say, over the coming months and hopefully years, you know, it'll be something that I get even more stuck into.
Jackson, just for our listeners right around Australia, obviously Hamburg, it's a storied and resilient city. It's a very historic, three major disasters, the Great Fire of 1842, the Allied firebombing in World War II, the flooding in 1962. Before German reunification, it was a city-state. It has so much history, and a club like St. Pauli has emerged. And looking at some vision of some games over the last few weeks, you know, standing terraces, cigarette smoke, beers going everywhere. It really is almost a bit of a throwback to the way football used to be. But they say that your club and the cross-city rivals Hamburg is the most ferocious derby in all of German football. And recently your club had a win over them 3-2. Can you just take us into the lead up to that game, and obviously your experience of just experiencing the build up and obviously the atmosphere in the stadium?
Yeah, it was absolutely huge. Obviously, unfortunately for myself, I had a bit of a, not a disastrous start, but picked up a little injury in, you know, basically my first week here, which set me back kind of a few weeks. So unfortunately, I wasn't involved in the game on the pitch, but even just being in the city and around the training ground, and then of course in the build-up to the actual game, you could feel the tension that you always feel in big cities before a major derby. There's just something in the air, a bit of, I don't know, electricity of, it's hard to put your finger on exactly what it is, but it was absolutely huge. It was great, and as you say, there's so much. It's one of those derbies, you know, a bit like my old city, Glasgow. There's a little bit more to it than just football, and I think that adds that extra flavor, absolutely, that gives it I don't know, an extra bit of bite on and off the pitch. But we were absolutely fantastic. It's one of our best performances of the season, and obviously came away with the 3 points as well, which is great. But yeah, bragging rights is just as important in this city when it comes to the derby.
And that little bit extra you're referring to is obviously the politics, the left-wing fans of St. Pauli famous, and obviously the other end of the spectrum with Hamburg. But tell us about how you're settling in on the pitch, because in the last two matches you've been injected off the bench. Where has the coach been playing you, and can you just tell us about how you're going, and can we, for all of the Australian fans that follow you closely, can we get you in the starting lineup soon?
Yeah, I'm hoping so. It's I've had to be patient, not only because, you know, I've had my injury, but because of the fantastic start that the team has made. So I knew it was never going to be a matter of, you know, as soon as I was ready to play, that I was just going to be chucked straight in. So, you know, I've had to be patient. I've had a couple of substitute appearances now, and then, you know, of course, the international break coming just as I was emerging kind of back to full fitness is a good thing, but also kind of a bad thing that takes you away for a couple of weeks just as you're building back into training with the group. So, listen, it's been a bit of a stop-start start for me on the field, but I'm at a point now where, you know, I've gone away and played two full games with the Socceroos. I played half an hour off the bench on the weekend. And, you know, now we're into the kind of heart of the season. I'm fully fit, and, yeah, I'm hoping to be contributing more and more, hopefully, from the start, sooner rather than later. But we play a diamond formation, which for me is absolutely perfect. You know, I've played it most times. I come on the side of the diamond, where I can play box to box, you know, get up and down the pitch in between the, you know, we play with one kind of sitting midfielder and one advanced number 10 and the guys on the side of the diamond. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of running. But when we get it right, it's very, very difficult to play against.
Yeah, and fifth spot on the ladder, 3 points from top. So, you know, there's some hope of promotion if you can continue, the club can continue the kind of form it's in for the first time in the top flight for a little over a decade. This is Box to Box. We're talking to Jackson Irvine in his first season at St. Pauli in the German Bundesliga 2, obviously just back from the Socceroos campaign in Doha, and of course in Hanoi against China and Vietnam respectively. We watched those games, you know, we're sort of on the edge of our seat. It's a tough group and a real long and arduous process. The camaraderie, though, just seemed to really burst out of the pitch with the two results under Arnie. Was it instant the moment you joined back into the group, and you know that feeling of camaraderie, as I say, with the boys?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something we have we've always kind of possessed as a group, like whether it's, you know, it can chop and change, but the core of the team's been pretty solid over the last kind of 3 or 4 years now, and if not longer for a lot of us. And not just the camaraderie, but there's a real calmness and composure and winning mentality amongst the group. You know, like obviously this is an intense period. You're playing in these huge games, important games, but there is a real sense of confidence and composure within the group that comes from experience, as well as, you know, we've got young players who, you know, have taken this in their stride, you know, going into this third phase of qualifying. And can't speak highly enough of how the boys came together, in terms of it's been a difficult start to the season for a lot of players, in terms of, you know, we've got guys like Tommy Rogic and Aiden Rusic who are flying at their clubs, playing week in, week out, and then guys like myself who have had stop-start campaigns. You know, I hadn't started a game since we played Jordan in Q8 back in June, and you know, so, and Matty Ryan had picked up an injury and hadn't played a game either. So, you know, we had guys kind of at both ends of the spectrum of where we were at, but we managed to piece it together, and especially in the first game, put together a pretty complete performance, and then go away from home in difficult conditions and come out with a win and a clean sheet. So, yeah, couldn't be prouder and more impressed with the way we handled this first couple of games. But, you know, obviously more to come, and more difficult games will be ahead.
Jackson, 10 unbeaten matches, only 2 goals conceded. How much of the current success do you place on the talent pool and depth that's now available to Graham Arnold? It's pretty impressive that he can bring players in and even leave players out who can't travel for quarantine reasons. You must, as being a member of the squad, you must feel that depth has given you a lot of strength.
Yeah, it does. Strength and, you know, headache to the manager as well, which is never a bad thing. As you say, we've got across all the positions, we've got, you know, guys are unfortunate not to be starting, not to be in the squad. And, you know, of course, there's guys that have, you know, got circumstances which means they can't be with us either. So, you know, everybody's contributions have been massive, whatever they've done, whether it's been on the pitch, off the pitch, not been with the group. Everybody's all pushing in the same direction. And as you say, that depth and across the positions is as strong as I can remember in a lot of ways. And you've got to be on top form at your club, and you've got to, you know, to maintain your spot, you've got to put in those performances week in, week out, be fit, be ready, because there's, you know, obviously a lot of guys that are willing to step into those positions and are capable of performing at that top level.
Jackson, you may have noticed, or you may not have noticed, that after the match against Vietnam, there was quite a spirited discussion within the football community. Some fans were a bit critical of the quality of the standard of the game, but quite a few prominent ex-Socceroos defended the result, the manner in which we won, highlighting and obviously the difficulties of playing in Asian environments. But what's your take on this debate, which does raise its head from time to time? Is it a sign of maturity in the football community, or is it still some fans being naive and not really understanding just how difficult it is to bounce around Asia in the environment and keep winning?
It's an interesting question, and it's something I've thought about a lot over coming off the back of the game, because, you know, as soon as you step off the pitch, you know, for us, the only thing that matters is 3 points. Like, this is a qualifying campaign. It's about winning matches and getting through. Of course, we want to play at our best all the time, but, you know, to come off the back of 10 straight wins and, you know, especially after that China display where we've just played in a world-class World Cup air-conditioned stadium, I thought we played fantastically well, complete performance. Yes, we could have maybe been a bit more clinical in the final third and, you know, probably put the game to bed a little bit more. But a 3-0 win, you know, I don't think they had a shot on target, you know, is as good as you can get in a qualifying campaign. And then to back that up, you know, with you know, the well-documented conditions of what we're playing in Hanoi, you know, it can't always be perfect football, and you know, I think it's only the sign of a good team that can win when you don't play at your best, and you can find ways to win games. You know, when you can look around each other on the pitch and say, right, you know, it's one of them days. We need to just get together, get the result, and get out, and then, you know, there'll be times again where we can play the slick, you know, exciting football that we want to be playing all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you said it at the top of your answer there, mate. It's all about getting the result, and that's what you're getting done. There are some big games coming up over the next few months before the final stage in the new year, and hopefully the kind of form that that you showed, just about getting the points, let alone you know, classy and stylish displays on the pitch, is the outcome. So, Jackson, mate, thanks again for coming on. We love watching your career from a distance, and so happy that you know, after that break before you got the contract with Hibs, that that, you know, that just is a long ago memory at the beginning of COVID, and your career is just flying again the way that it should have been all along, mate. So yeah, stay well, and your beautiful mum sends the message, I miss you horribly, can't wait to see you. So
thanks very much, guys. I appreciate it, and yeah, hopefully we'll be back on home soil sooner rather than later, because we're all the boys are desperate to, you know, see our families and play in front of the fans again. But you know, as you say, it's just the way of the world, and circumstances will dictate that. But yeah, anytime, appreciate being on the show.
Good on you, mate. Jackson Irvine, St. Pauli Socceroo, friend of ours, and it's great to talk to him whenever we get the opportunity to do so. We're going to talk about more of his Socceroo teammates and the Matildas as well after the break, so stick around. That's next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal.
Box to Box. That was a great chat with our good friend Jackson Irvine. He's been on quite a few times since we started, pretty much at every club he's been at. Lots more to talk about Socceroos and Matilda's style with Willem. But Willem, while we were talking with Jackson, you sent a few photos out on the chat of your visit to the Millantor Stadion in Hamburg, the home of St. Pauli, on your way to the World Cup with Edge in Russia a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's right, bro. Did bring back some fantastic memories. May 2018, I was in Hamburg, and good to hear that Jackson's getting out and about and exploring the city. I'm sure it won't be too long until he stumbles across the Molotov Music Club, fantastic little music venue there. And that was only a couple of months before I trekked over and joined the Green and Gold Army for the 2018 World Cup. Not long now until the 2022 World Cup is in our sights, the 2023 Home World Cup for the women as well. The best way to make sure that you're up to date and don't miss out on any overseas tours information is, of course, to join the Green and Gold Army's mailing list, which you can do where, Michael?
You can do it at ggatravel.com.au, and we're actually in the throes of putting the finishing touches on our Qatar product, and it's all of a sudden feeling exciting. Vaccination rollout's going well, and international travel is on the horizon, and won't that be fun, Willem, being able to get on a plane and enjoy life again?
Certainly will be. Let's start Socceroos and Matilda Central in England, where Sam Kerr scored a brace for Chelsea, of course. They defeated Everton 4-0 to kickstart their title defence. Emily Gelnick played a full match on debut for Aston Villa. Villa had a hard time getting past Mackenzie Arnold in West Ham's goal, but levelled late for a 1-1 draw. And Kaya Simon made her debut for Tottenham and played an hour in their surprise 2-1 win over Manchester City, where Alana Kennedy was in defence. Around the continent, Angela Beard, Claire Wheeler and India Paige Riley enjoyed a 3-0 win with Fortuna Høring in Denmark. Bit of an Aussie stronghold developing there. And spare a thought, Michael, for Ella Mastrantonio at Lazio. 8-1 they lost to AC Milan. She was on the end of a couple of those sort of defeats for Bristol City last year, and now copping similar at Lazio. But a couple of the players I did mention there, Wheeler and Paige Riley, are in to Tony Gustafsson's Matilda's training camp squad ahead of the friendly against Ireland. Out go Ellie Carpenter and Kaya Simon, Michael.
Yes, it just proves, Willem, doesn't it, the depth, the ability for Tony Gustafsson to develop depth with the Matildas is going to be very important in the lead-up and during the 2023 Women's World Cup and also the Asian Cup next year in India. Obviously, injuries have kept Simon and Carpenter out, and that's provided an opportunity for two local players. I'm not sure whether those players might have been chosen in the event that travel was easier. I think there's probably a couple of players back here in Australia that are probably quite a way ahead of Claire and Indy in terms of their form. However, Claire and Indy are in the local neighbourhood in Denmark and are able to get across and join the camp. And obviously it's a big camp, so they'll be doing some match simulation and they need full teams to do that. So it's a good opportunity for Claire and Indy to cut their teeth in that environment.
To the Socceroos, Harry Soutar standing at Stoke continues to rise as he was named captain for their nil-all draw with Huddersfield before backing up in the centre of defence with a 1-1 draw with Barnsley. Both Kenny Dougal and Callum Elder have been seeing plenty of minutes for Blackpool and Hull City, but both are struggling in terms of league position. Blackpool in the relegation spots and Hull City just a point out of it. The only Aussie racking up any consistent minutes in a top-tier league at the moment is Aidan Rustich. He was back into Eintracht Frankfurt's 11 for their game against Stuttgart, where they picked up a hand point. Down in the lower levels at Stuttgart, Rob, Alu Kwol has scored his fourth goal of the season. A lot of very intrigued eyes here in Australia on Alu's progress. I think he might just crack it one day.
Yeah, well, look, it's a good sign that that he's on the score sheet. You know, it was a swift rise to stardom, wasn't it? From the Mariners to Germany, famously not noticed by the Melbourne Victory or rejected by the Victory. So, yeah, it'll be fascinating to watch his career as the pathway rolls out in front of him.
And we'll finish up this week with Kevin Muscat, who was named J-League Manager of the Month with Yokohama F Marinos. They are still just a point off top spot, although Kawasaki do have a game in hand. So well done to Kev. We're all watching you, and may this success continue right to the pointy end of the campaign. FFA Cup was back, as we know, this week, guys. Brisbane Roar and Gold Coast Knights became the first sides to advance to the round of 16 as the competition returned. Brisbane accounted for Peninsula Power 3-0 at Redcliffe. New signings, Matty Steinman, Luke Ivanovic, and Juan Lescano all found the net. The following evening, Gold Coast took 80 minutes to break down Cairns-based Minnows Edge Hill United. Once they did, they added a second through a relation of a very famous Socceroo.
It's all over. In fact, it is the substitute who came on for Marek Mardley, Dante Mariner, who does it again off the bench as he did against Peninsula Power at the weekend. The nephew of Tim Cahill shows that goal scoring does indeed run in the genes.
Just the one game scheduled for the next week. That will be on Tuesday night between Queensland Lions FC and Casual Arena of the Northern Territory. Michael, not the usual glut of fixtures we get to sink our teeth into at the start of the FFA Cup, but I suppose the flip side of that is that it gives time to probably analyse and study and then enjoy the games in isolation. It's still going to be some feat, though, for them to pull off the whole competition. I think we might have to be patient with it.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a patient start to the A-League, W-League, and obviously early FFA Cup rounds, but they have some time up their sleeve, and we know there's certainty coming when vaccination rates that hit the percentages. But I noticed Rob was talking about the photos that you put on WhatsApp of the stadium in Hamburg, but I'm surprised Rob didn't mention the photo of the massive sausage gravy and chips you also put in there.
The curry snags, yeah, they were unbelievable. Oh, 3 years on, I couldn't remember how good they tasted.
They look pretty good. You don't get anything like that over here in Melbourne, but yeah, it looks pretty good, doesn't it, Rob?
It looks delicious, mate, especially given as we record the podcast, it's around dinner time. So, yeah, good timing, Rob.
The Asian Champions League round of 16 was contested this week with mixed fortunes for the Aussies involved. Mitch Langerak conceded 2 goals for Nagoya but made a couple of brilliant saves to keep them in the contest. Fortunately, up the other end, his teammates scored 4, so they are through. Adam Taggart started for Saritsu Osaka but was ineffectual as they lost to Pohang Steelers 1-0. Alex Grant, former Glory defender, was on the bench for Pohang but doesn't really get a look in when the whips are cracking, unfortunately. And Aurelio Vidmar, we know, is the boss of BG Batum United. They were the underdogs but pushed John Book Motors all the way at the Steelyard. Aurelio himself, however, was unable to travel due to quarantine restrictions. They did, however, get eliminated. Otherwise, it was a tense round of fixtures. 3 of the 8 games went to penalties. The other sides to progress were Persepolis and Ulsan, both last year's finalists, Al Nasser, Al Wada, and Al Hilal. So, Rob, all eyes from an Australian point of view on Mitch Langerak as we get to the pointy end of the Asian Champions League.
Absolutely, and we will report it all as it all plays out for Mitch in the not too far distant future. All right, nice and tight, well and well done. After the break, Marcela Mora Iharaho from The Guardian. Our eyes were all on Lionel Messi against Bolivia in the World Cup qualifier. He got the job done. Hat-trick, broke Pelé's record. It was a great story. Marcelo wrote an incredible article. If you haven't read it, you should. But you're going to get the chance to listen to it when you stick around next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. And for anyone who listens to the great football podcast, The Guardian Football Weekly, they'll be very familiar with our next guest, Marcela Mora I Araujo. Max Rushton, who hosts that podcast, introduced us to Marcela a little while ago, and she's been very generous joining us for some great South American football stories. And there was probably none bigger than the one that occurred in the last week, where Argentina beat Bolivia in a World Cup qualifier at the Monumental Stadium. Pelé had a record that is now not his record because it's Lionel Messi's after his hat-trick. And we welcome Marcela to the show. How are you, Marcela?
Hi, how are you?
I'm really well. And we just loved your article in The Guardian. So if anyone's looking for a good read, then check it out. It's headline, Cry With Me, Argentina. Thierry Messi delights fans and breaks Pelé's record. I just loved the connection with Evita and all the rest of it, the resonance that came through. So, yeah, it was a great article.
Thank you so much. Yes, I think, I mean, you know, the way the World Cup qualifiers work, really, to beat for Argentina to beat Bolivia at home this early in the kind of qualifiers isn't like, wow, you know, Messi, he must be really good. He scored three against Bolivia because, and I think I kind of mentioned it, I'm enough of a football snob to know that that's not like, you know, a stop press moment. Bolivia, you know, are a much less resourced nation when it comes to football for us to kind of boast about or make a big deal of it. But I think the context in which this happened, it's not so much the hat-trick, but Messi's emotional response to it that I found incredibly moving. And I kind of wanted to convey that a little bit, because I think we do get bogged down in results and tactics and analysis, and certainly at Argentina level, for him, there has been a lot of criticisms of, you know, every detail. Did he have his heart? Was his heart in it? Did he sing the national anthem with enough, you know, passion and so on? And so suddenly it was like winning the Copa America. And we guys spoke about this at the time, you know, that really was the big international official tournament that mattered. And he did it. And that was, you know, worthy of a lot of kind of media attention and fan passion and so on. But this, which came on the tails of quite a different kind of a fiasco in Brazil, which we can talk about a little bit, this hat-trick against Bolivia seemed literally like it was just something he'd been waiting for so long, and it was that release, that cathartic kind of redemptive moment when he just burst into tears at the immediately after the match on the touchlines. You know, the guy says, "Oh, you won, hat trick, blah blah blah," and he just goes, "Oh yes, yes, it means so much for me, for my mother, for my siblings, for the terraces." You know, and it was again that phrase, "For my mother and the terraces." It was like he was just addressing us all, and it felt like we all needed to cry, you know, cathartic, redemptive tears of just being suddenly, finally able for fans to go back. This was the first game with spectators there, you know, since March 2020. So we all know the kind of toll this you know, pandemic restrictions are taking, and it just suddenly felt like a real return to something. There were fans in the crowd, the game was played, it was played well, it was, you know, he was happy and smiling and scored three goals, and also there was no kind of weird, you know, off-pitch football complication to, you know, like there had been in Brazil. So it just felt very pure moment of joy for the game and for the of the game itself, if that's not too corny a thing to say.
Marcella, I noticed that if you were one of the 21,000 fans, it was almost like you won the trifecta. You were allowed back into the ground to see your Argentina go round again, but also you got to see Messi break Pelé's record and lift the Copa America in front of the fans. So I can understand why there was so much emotion, but can you tell me what you think Pelé's goal-scoring record means to Messi and to Argentina more broadly? I know different generations, it's always hard to compare, but why do you think that seemed to mean so much to Messi?
I don't know if he was crying so much through the goal-scoring record. I think, you know, there's Pelé symbolises something enormous in the history of football, in the history of South American football, and specifically in the rivalry between Argentina and Brazil, I think. You know, for the world, Pelé is one thing, and for Argentina, Pelé is someone that, well, we've always liked to say Maradona's bigger than Pelé, and I think there were, you know, quite a lot of jokes about Messi being bigger than Pelé this week. But I don't think it matters in itself that, you know, that the number of goals, the 77 international South American goals, or that, you know, I think in Brazil, Marta, the female adult team goal scorer has scored a lot more, you know, over 100 internationally for Brazil. So I don't think it's something in the number of goals themselves. It's more that kind of, you know, like the flag and like the national badge and like the there's a symbolic enormity to surpassing Pelé's record, to breaking anyone's record, actually, because in Argentina we, you know, keep track of every goal that anyone scored. So even, you know, if a club player like Palermo surpasses Pancho Varaglio's goal record for their club, is a guy who, you know, has been playing since 1900 or something, it's a big deal. But in this particular case, I wouldn't expect that what Messi was so moved by was trumping Pelé, if you like. And I think he did make some kind of comment about this. Pelé's now elderly, and he's in fact in hospital, quite ill. And with Maradona and that comparison, both Pelé and Maradona came to laugh about it a lot. You know, this Argentinian attitude of Maradona is bigger than Pelé. And in Brazil, you know, when I went there for the World Cup in 2014, they actually had a song that said, you know, Pelé's got more World Cups than Maradona. So I think it's a playful, it's a game rivalry thing. But definitely, you know, Pelé and Maradona came to kind of sing together. I mean, Maradona had a chat show at one point. He invited Pelé to interview him. Pelé came with his guitar and devoted a song to Maradona. So it's not, you know, that I don't think the meaning of it lies in beating Pelé. Certainly not for Messi. He's much younger, probably a lot less aware, actually, of all of that. He's less of a football connoisseur, if you like, than Maradona was. You know, he doesn't watch that much football. I doubt Pelé means much to him. I think it's more, as I say, on the one hand, the, you know, the kind of symbolic meaning of beating a particular record, which I think Messi's done so many times on so many different platforms and titles that this wouldn't be that significant. But more that moment of doing it for Argentina. You know, I think he beat Brazil in Brazil in the Copa America, and that he knew he could do that. And now he beat Brazil's, you know, top goal scorer's international record, which means he's you know, it's for your country. And he I think he was able to have that kind of connective moment with the crowd at home and on Argentinian soil. And that, I think, is what really mattered to him more than breaking Pelé's record.
Marcelo, look, it's always fascinating listening to you. Your insights are something we cherish on this side of the world. We know you're in London. You spend half your life in Argentina and in London as well. So thank you so much for coming on and reflecting on Lionel Messi, not just one of the greatest footballers of all time, one of the greatest sports people of all time. And we know our listeners will just love it. So you stay well, Marcelo, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Not at all. Marcela Mora y Araujo. Check her out on The Guardian. Okay, stick around. After the break, we're going to talk the World Cup, the biennial debate. Should we have it? Should we not? We'll be chomping the flesh on that one after the break.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. What a wonderful chat with the loquacious Marcela Mora y Araujo. She loves her Argentinian heritage and she waxes so lyrical on it as she lights a cigarette, pours her coffee to the sounds of a London backdrop, the sirens. It was fantastic. We're going to talk World Cup biennial debate in a moment, but before we do, Storage King, they are the place you need to go if you are moving, if you are decluttering, or you just need more space. You got to do it with Storage King because they are the best in the business, and that's according to Canstar Blue's Most Satisfied Customer Award winner award of 2021, rated 5 stars for value for money, safety and security, quality of storage and convenience. Contactless move-in, Storage King will keep you as safe as the things you store. So visit storageking.com.au and let Storage King give you back some space. Do 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 do. Derek, you are the man in the arbiter's chair here. There's going to be some arguments for and against the biennial World Cup. I'm going to hand over the proverbial baton to you.
Yeah, we touched on this in the show last week, gents, and I think we all agreed that we didn't really, you know, weren't able to do it justice with the couple of minutes that we had allocated. And the good news is, listeners, behind the scenes, we often, when we're doing these debates, have to decide who's for and against, and maybe someone has to go to a corner they're not that familiar with. But actually, luckily enough, we've got Edge in the red corner, Edge very pro the movement towards a biennial FIFA World Cup for a number of different reasons, and Rob very much on the other side. And we're going to go to Rob first. And, you know, Rob, Arsene Wenger, one of the scholars of the game, one of the most respected men in football, says that we want this. We want more emotion. We want more drama. You know, you're a Liverpool fan. You scoff at the top table of football. You know, look at the Champions League last night, full of drama, including your team. Surely we want this every 2 years.
It's bizarre that Arsene thinks this. It might be helpful if he consults the players who actually play the game. I mean, you only have to read the football press during the course of the week to see Jonas Bayer-Hoffmann, the FIFPro General Secretary, who was on the front foot criticising that very Arsene Wenger for not consulting the players. UEFA and CONMEBOL are up in arms, threatening a boycott. Look, I think it's all encapsulated for me in the article that David Walsh wrote in The Times. Give me a moment to share this little paragraph. Sport has an ecosystem that isn't perfect, but one that would not be helped by playing football or giving football an even more dominant position in the market than it already does. The Olympics has its place in the calendar, and bearing in mind the multitude of sports it accommodates, they would be disadvantaged by sharing a summer schedule with a Football World Cup. Agree 100%, not to mention the fact that the Women's World Cup is also on the biennial cycle. So regardless of what Arsene says, and he thinks it's not about the money, when, you know, they always say, when they say it's not about the money, you know what it's about, the money. So, David Walsh wrote it perfectly. Football has an ecosystem and a biennial World Cup is not involved in that.
Edge, one of the arguments against this plan is that it might not favour the smaller nations. If they're not able to play in their regional tournaments, then obviously qualification, even in an expanded format, means that those clubs are in the kind of, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 ratings in the world are not going to get a fair crack at an international tournament? Is this just all about doing what the big clubs or the big countries want, or is there another perspective here?
I think there is another perspective, and I'd just like to open up by reflecting on some of Rob's comments, where he's just obviously cast aside his Lebanese heritage and embracing
Euro. Don't go the man edge. You do have a tendency Euro to do snobbery. This. Play the ball, not the man.
Let me finish.
But just as long as you play the ball and not the man.
No, you've just discarded your Lebanese heritage, because this is all about realigning the power of the sport and away from UEFA. This is about channeling the rivers of gold into the FIFA environment, which trickles down to the federations, and everybody can have a drink at the trough on this one, because it is going to have a very big impact. I mean, for me, there's three big reasons why this is a good idea. Revamping the international football calendar. We've just had Jackson Irvine on talking about the significance of travelling every month across to the other side of the world to play in the windows. If we have just two windows in March and October, it's reducing the burden on the players. And it also allows people to have greater connections with international football, on the basis that when they're together for a month, they're going to be playing games on a regular basis. We'll get that fix of international football before they go back to their clubs. There's also going to be a 25-day blackout after international tournaments, so players can have an enshrined annual holiday, which they don't get at the moment. And obviously increased revenue for FIFA. And you know there's going to be increased revenue for FIFA, because you've only got to look at what the UEFA president said. Seferin, who is a FIFA vice president, by the way, we should remind him of that. He complains about a lack of consultation, a little bit ironic. And also the organisation representing the world's major domestic leagues, that's called the World Leagues Forum, they are aghast. They actually used the word aghast in their press release, saying that a biennial World Cup would negatively disrupt the football economy and undermine players' welfare in a calendar that's already overloaded. I think that's code for blimey, they're going to do us out of dollars. And I think it's a good thing that the big super clubs, who at the moment consume significant amounts of revenue, that they actually have their wings clipped and international football returns to the top of the pyramid. We can have a Melbourne Grand Prix every year. We can have a Wimbledon every year. We can have a Super Bowl every year. We can have a NRL Grand Final every year. Why can't we have a World Cup every 2 years? There's enough room in the calendar to do this. And with the reduction in the travelling, it will be a significant thing. So that's just my assessment of what's going on there. And I'd like Rob to re-engage with his regional heritage, so the rest of the world can also have a drink at the trough, not just Europe.
Yeah, well, look, obviously the time has just evaporated. So in this presidential debate, there isn't actually a lot of time left. So what I'd give to each speaker is just to give their concluding elevator pitch. You know, you're at FIFA headquarters, you bump into Gianni Infantino and his fantastic eyebrows in the elevator, and you've got 10 to 20 seconds to tell him what you really think. Rob, what are you going to tell him?
So, Gianni, you've done a wonderful job getting respect for FIFA back in the game. Don't make a decision that flushes the renewed respect down the S-bend. It would be a shocking decision for the rest of the world to be so greedy as to take the place of the Olympics, the Women's World Cup, and so many other sports in this biennial ecosystem cycle. Please do not do it, Gianni.
A new edge?
Oh, I'm just going to channel a bit of Pep Guardiola, who said that I'm always glad when new ideas are put on the table to discuss. You don't have to criminalise ideas. The clubs and the leagues defend their position, FIFA defend theirs, and UEFA defend theirs. That's why when we talk about global football ideas, it is ridiculous, because everybody just looks after themselves. The World Cup is amazing. It's the biggest tournament, and as a spectator, I always love it. If I could watch it every 2 years, I would be very, very happy.
And if the Damo, just insert the cash register, ka-ching, as the
We should just leave our audience to decide who's got the more compelling case.
You always
case,
have
Rob.
The last say, Edge.
Look, if the Saudis, the Bangladeshis, and the Sri Lankans think it's a good idea, it must be Must be a sure thing, gents, but there we go, Rob.
All right,
well, another Euro that. Snobbery. picking on the Bangladeshis and the Sri Lankans.
Picking on the little guys. Yeah, right. Okay, well done. Good debate, guys. I
want Australia to play a World Cup qualifier in the Maldives.
Okay, all right. Or maybe Gibraltar, your next favourite country. Yeah, all right, that's the World Cup debate after the break. Stoppage time on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
The kings of storage, moving and more.
And this could be the most crucial goal.
Yes, this is Box to Box. It's been a great fun show this week with our earlier chat with Jackson, Marcelo Mora, Ihirawa, reflecting on Lionel Messi. But we're going to bring it home with a chat about the Champions League and a few other points. We're going to reflect on a club that each of us has chosen to take a look at. But before we do, I want to talk about Chemist Warehouse, because if you don't follow the world game and you follow the domestic games of AFL and NRL, it is the footy final sale. And there are half-price vitamins across the range at Chemist Warehouse. Swiss, Go Healthy, Nature's Own, Blackmore, Synovus, Inner Health, Thompson's, BioGland, Ethical Nutrients, LifeSpace, Nature's Way, Nutrilife, Caruso's, Naturopathica and Henry Bloom's. They do have them all. So get into Chemist Warehouse right now and you will find all of the vitamins you need to stay as healthy as you want to be. Go to chemistwarehouse.com.au to find your nearest store. Half-price vitamin sale, footy final sale on now at Chemist Warehouse. Okay, gentlemen, we're going to talk Champions League. It was a bumper a couple of days to welcome back the top tournament in the world. But, Derek, before we do, we just want to touch briefly on what seems to be two vastly differing views on the injury to Harvey Elliott, the young Liverpool player, 18 years old, who had his ankle dislocated against Leeds, and Pascal Struyck, the Leeds player who was the offender in this instance, had his red card upheld, and Harvey Elliott has defended the injury, or the at least Struyck, and said that he shouldn't have been rubbed out. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think Edge and I have diverging opinions on this. When I saw it for the first time, and I wasn't watching it live, so I went into watching the highlight knowing what I was looking for. And to be honest with you, I felt like it was a genuine attempt to try and win the ball. It wasn't like a season wrecker, not in the way that Roy Keane's premeditated assault on Alf Inge Haaland, which of course ended the Norwegian's career. And even the one more close to home for me, Aaron Ramsey's horrific injury when Ryan Shawcross in true Stoke style decided to leave one on him in the first couple of minutes of the game to show him who was boss. I'm not saying for a second that this wasn't, you know, potentially a reckless tackle in the sense that and where the letter of the law is. As soon as you're sliding and your studs are up, then, you know, you are in the hands of the referee and what materialises. But I, you know, if the player himself says, you know, I don't have any ill feeling from it. I felt like, yes, was it a red card? Yeah, probably. But I think, Edge, you know, was the red card given the outcome or was it given for the intent?
Oh, it definitely was given for the outcome, no doubt about it. I think you make some very good points there, Derek, and we're normally seeing a red card for a tackle winner. A player goes over the ball or is a studs up. This one was a bit different. He slid in from the side. You made the case that he was going for the ball, but having done that a few times myself, you can, if you come in from the side...
Sounding very guilty as you say that, Edge.
Yeah, I know. But if you come in from the side and behind a player, you can take both of their legs out and the ball at the same time. And it can disguise how crude it is. I thought it was... I thought it was unnecessary. I thought it was a dangerous act and deserved a red card. But definitely the referee saw the outcome of it, and I mean the reaction is obviously a nasty one. But he got his foot caught up underneath it, and you know, to me it was a reckless tackle. It was a reckless tackle,
Rob,
and that's a red card.
I think Rob and Edge, you know, and Willem, the main story here is really the fact, you know, Harvey Elliott has had an amazing start to the season at Liverpool. Let's face it, while United have been, you know, buying Ronaldo and Chelsea have been buying Lukaku and everyone's been strengthening their squads, Liverpool didn't really go and do the business that the other teams did. But, you know, and Klopp seemingly happy to put in a young guy in the centre of his midfield, and you know, it doesn't matter what game you're playing in. You know, if you're in Liverpool's centre of midfield, you have to be a hell of a player. So, you know, I think all of us can just say, look, he says he will try and get back for the end of the season. Let's hope he does. And yeah, look, also I hope that Pascal Struijk can move on too, because, you know, it's often forgotten the guys that make the tackles too. Like, you know, it's very upsetting, I think, as a footballer injuring one of your fellow professionals if you didn't mean to do it. So I really hope for both gentlemen involved that there's some kind of long-term positive outcomes there.
Yeah, well, Struijk did look to have a real look of shock on his face, as Mo Salah did, who was calling the medical support off the bench. They were both, the deformed nature of the way that that Elliott's ankles appeared to be was very upsetting to them. So, yeah, I think we can all agree that there is no black and white in this discussion. That I think both of you are right, and it's almost impossible. I'll just say, as a Liverpool supporter, that I admired Harvey Elliott's attitude in all of this, and I think as an 18-year-old to be able to say that and come out all the better for it, even giving a young fan his kit in hospital, feeding him, that guy goes straight to the top of the class. All right, Champions League, guys. We decided we were going to have a bit of a look at the Champions League before the couple of tournament days of play, and chose some of the obvious or the usual suspects, but also, as I am wont to do, chose the underdog Sheriff Tiraspol. So I'm going to leave it till the end to comment on that. But Willem, you are a Manchester United supporter. All they ever did, well, you told us you were, when you didn't say you were passionate, but you said if you had to choose a club in the Premier League, it would be Manchester United.
That is true.
I distinctly remember asking you a question. I'm glad you acknowledged that. So your thoughts on what was a disappointing outcome against Old Boys?
Oh, hugely disappointing, Rob, especially 1-0 up and cruising relatively they were. And morale at the club in general has been super high ahead of this Champions League campaign. They lost the Europa League final last season, that lengthy penalty shootout where David De Gea looked like he wanted to be anywhere but between the teeth of goal. They've made some big signings, as we all know, Jadon Sancho, Rafael Varane, Cristiano Ronaldo. They don't really come much bigger in a month into the league season. They're topping the table, and I think they would have been pretty happy with the group they've drawn: Atalanta, Villarreal, and Switzerland's Young Boys. I mean, there's no easy groups in the Champions League, but they can get certainly a little bit nastier than that. So they were, 1-0 up in Switzerland. A pretty poor tackle from Aaron Wan-Bissaka. No doubt that one was a red card. Saw them down to 10 men. And then, unfortunately, Jesse Lingard, it just doesn't seem to go for him in a red kit. No, this was the blue barcode kit, the QR code kit, but a Manchester United kit nonetheless. He coughed up a pretty soft back pass, which was turned into the net. And history is against them now, Rob. No side has ever won no side has ever lost the first game of the Champions League and gone on to win it. I think the league is clearly their priority, but historically they also want to make an impact in Europe. I think, unfortunately, the depth of the squad might just be a little bit weak and they might fall short in both categories, but I still expect them to get out of the group from here.
Okay, good analysis. At the moment, they're sitting at the bottom of Group F, beneath, as you say, Young Boys, Atalanta and Villarreal. All right, Derek, PSG. I was my eyebrow raised when you mentioned them, but I guess somebody had to pick them.
I went for Paris Saint-Germain, and of course they, you know, didn't start particularly well. You know, they would expect to go to Club Brugge and, you know, win there. It was a 1-1. They took the lead, and again, Ander Herrera, of all people, putting them in front before Brugge got their equaliser. This was the first time that the trident had been played up front, the Mbappe, Messi and Neymar, that everyone's been really excited to really excited to see. They are in a group that looks tough on paper too. You know, there's Manchester City And there's RB Leipzig, of course. And RB Leipzig, of course, they've been shorn of a lot of their best players. You know, Nagelsmann has already gone and raided them a few times. Liverpool took one of their centre-backs earlier in the transfer window. But still, Leipzig are Leipzig. There are signs of life there. But I wanted to do PSG because, look, honestly, this is like Championship Manager time. Like, you've just assembled your fantasy team. You've got Maurizio Pochettino, who doesn't even get a mention these days. It's almost irrelevant who the coach is. But Pochettino, and it's still one of the most fancied coaches in world football, and a host of clubs, including Manchester United, were after his signature. You know, some time ago, they, apart from their trident, they've brought, of course, on free transfers, Gianluigi Donnarumma, and, you know, of course, his heroics and for Italy recently at such a tender age. He's absolutely phenomenal. And then, of course, they've added Wijnaldum from Liverpool as a free transfer. They've got Hakimi there. Sergio Ramos has come in as a free transfer. And, of course, they're not going to get too much out of Ramos in terms of longevity in his career. God, what are they going to get? A guy who's won the Champions League four or five times. So I suppose this is a team that has been built to win this tournament. It doesn't say that I think that they will win this tournament, and I think it would be quite funny if they didn't. But this is fantasy football, guys. This is like when you come up with your dream teams, you know, half of these players you'd have in your starting lineup. So let's see how they get on.
Okay, good analysis. All right, Edge, it's the post-Hansi Flick era at Bayern Munich. The aforementioned Julian Nagelsmann moved over from RB Leipzig. They're sitting second top on the ladder, not the usual spot for them, but they had a good win in the Champions League this week.
They certainly did. It's easy to probably focus in on the performance of Barcelona and not Bayern Munich. Obviously, the 3-0 win was not as triumphant as the 8-2 quarter-final humiliation that Bayern handed out to Barcelona 13 months ago with Leo Messi in that team as well. But Bayern Munich, you know, they're ever dependable, aren't they? And you've only got to look at just the players who were dominant. Robert Lewandowski and Thomas Müller getting the job done. They are incredibly consistent strikers. You know, they will take Bayern a long way into this competition. But Bayern this year also have some of the world's best talent. And a player that I really like is the young 19-year-old Alphonso Davies, who's coming along very, very well. And he's an exciting player, the young Canadian player. But also, you know, they have other talented players like Leroy Sané, and obviously Derek and me, we love Leon Goretzka. He can do anything at any time. They have enough players in their arsenal to go deep into the tournament. I'm expecting them to cruise through this group. They will win comfortably at home and get enough points away to finish top of the group and set themselves up for a potentially a deep run. Whether they've got the defence to go all the way, I'm not too sure. But I think they'll be there with the heavies at the end of the tournament, no doubt.
Edge, it must be pointed out quickly, you just mentioned Arsenal there. That will be the only time Arsenal will be mentioned in context of the Champions League for some time.
I just had to get it in for you, Derek.
I'm glad you responded at least, Derek, so that I didn't have to. Well done, Michael. So, look, I had the choice of going with my club, Liverpool. Manchester City would have been some low-hanging fruit. You know, plenty of other clubs across the Champions League. But when I got a little bit of a nudge from Derek that, you know, I should stand by my underdog picking status, I was happy to go with Sheriff Tiraspol. So they are one of the clubs that you see in the Champions League bob up every year and you think, I don't know much about them. I need to do a little bit more homework. But consider this. Sheriff Tiraspol qualified for the Champions League group stage for the very first time when they had a playoff victory over Dinamo Zagreb in August. So it's the first time in the Champions League that a club from one of Europe's unrecognised de facto republics is participating in international law. Transdniester is a thin sliver of land on the border with Ukraine. It belongs to the Republic of Moldova, but they take their independence very seriously. Do they? Do not, that whilst they compete for in the Moldovan League, they don't consider themselves FC Sheriff Tiraspol from Moldova. They consider themselves from Transdniester. It uses its own currency, the Transdniestrian ruble. It cannot be obtained or exchanged anywhere else in the world. In fact, in Tiraspol, the phone signals don't even register in Moldova, 20 kilometres away. So that tells you how passionate that they are about their own independence. And while the rest of the top division play on sports pitches rented from municipal authorities, Sheriff's Home is a specially constructed $200 million arena on the outskirts of Tiraspol. They've won 20 of the 22 Moldovan leagues they've contested. Now, when you dig a little deeper, this is not your classic underdog story. Sheriff is synonymous with power in Transdniester. The Sheriff Company ostensibly was started as a charity, but pretty much runs the entire state of the country. So they have gotten through off the back of a lot of money. And in that part of the world, let me assure you that not all of that money is squeaky clean. They are in the Champions League. They are now sitting, would you believe it, on top of the table that they're in, ahead of Real Madrid, Inter Milan, and of course Shakhtar Donetsk from the Ukraine, who they beat. I'll just end by saying that when you watch the highlights package, you'll see that the first goal had an assist by Cristiano, and Adama Traore scored it. Now, this is not the Cristiano Ronaldo that we know. It's Cristiano Silva, the Brazilian. And Adama Traore just happens to share the same name as the bulky Wolves striker. So go figure. Look, I don't know how that's going to work out for Sheriff Tiraspol throughout the course of the Champions League, but they are a fascinating story to watch, gentlemen.
A new sheriff in town.
A new sheriff in town, exactly. And that charity that the club was named after was meant to support the local police. So I think that is, in fact, it is where the sheriff comes from. Gentlemen, we are over time in our new podcasting format of this show. Willem, well done on your analysis of Manchester United there, who you don't follow but sometimes do.
Thank you, Robin. Just a quick word for Adama Traore, the former Melbourne Victory, now Western Sydney Wanderers left back as well.
Exactly. Yeah, it's
they're everywhere.
Exactly. Edge, well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Roberto. Yeah, nothing personal in that debate about the World Cup, Rob. I know that I won it easily, but you just, I want you to know that I still love you.
Now, I know you did, Edge. I just humbly bow before your greatness. So I just accept my loss with great humility. Derek, thank you.
I knew you would.
Thank you very much. And yeah, nothing personal against the Sri Lankans or Bangladeshis.
And Damo, thank you for putting this thing together. And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this, like us on the podcast, recommend us to your friends. We have some fun doing it. We hope you enjoy listening to it as well. And join us next week when we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.